Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that's not too interesting, it's not boring, it's just interesting enough. And with me today are Alex.
Hello there, Martin. How's it going?
It's going okay. It's going all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to get into series two of the Just Interesting podcast. Brand
now,
new.
Are we calling it series or are we calling it season?
It's
an ongoing debate.
I don't know, Martin. I feel.
I know what. Let's let the viewers decide.
Okay, that sounds.
Let's do a poll.
Good,
do a poll. Season two or series two? Let us know in the poll. And Robin, how are you?
Hello, I am well, thank you. How are you doing, Martin?
Yes, I'm okay. It's still quite warm, actually. Today was a little bit cooler. We're talking about the weather, of course. We're British.
Yeah, of course, we're straight there.
But yeah, I'm still feeling a little bit flush this evening. A bit muggy.
You're not pregnant, are you, Martin?
Oh, I am. Very much so.
Classic symptom
very
of pregnancy,
so.
That.
Yeah, it is. It is. And speaking of pregnant, a massive thank you to our patron supporters who are not pregnant, but, you know, any segue will do. Thanks for your support.
I'm not sure that qualifies as a segue.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work, but we'll go with it.
Massive thank you to our Patreon supporters, and if you happen to be walking along whilst you're listening to this, hello Marianne.
Yeah, hi.
So yes. I throw that out there. Yeah.
It was really nice to chat to a lot of our Patreon supporters in Discord last week at the end of our the finale of series one of this podcast.
Mm-hmm. The grand finale. Not that you could probably tell if you're listening to these out of order. You'd have no idea.
Who else? I'd also like to shout out Peaswad. Thank you, Peaswad, for the quiz that you hosted in our Discord. That was really fun.
That was an amazing quiz.
Yeah. Robin still somehow won. I don't know how.
It was rigged, I'll confess. Peaswad gave me the answers beforehand.
Oh, no. Well, you didn't give me the answers.
But our Patreon supporters... they can get an episode that we just recorded before we recorded this, didn't we? Ghislaine Maxwell and her arrest and her dealings with Jeffrey Epstein.
And that's demonetized.
And potentially Prince Andrew.
Demonetized and perhaps Prince Andrew going forward. So we'll see what happens with that one. But if you want to get our thoughts on that and what we think will happen as a result of this arrest, then head on over there and support us. With that said, what are we talking about today? We are talking about the things we've learned this week, and then our very special topic is about the Ark of the Covenant. Ooh. And more specifically, what's happened to it?
Yeah, I mean, where is it?
Yeah.
That's the big question on everyone's lips right now.
It is. It is.
Today.
That'd be such a 2020 move, wouldn't it, if it actually showed up?
Oh, come on.
It'd be so 2020 if we found it.
Yeah. And it was sharp in like Croydon, wasn't it? Like nowhere near where it's supposed to be. And then of course immediately be stolen by Donald Trump.
Yeah. I mean, we do have some interesting theories that aren't too far away from Croydon.
Mm-hmm. So that's true. It's in a surprising number of local locations.
Yeah.
So there we go. I'm very excited to hear about those too. And then we'll finish up with a quiz, won't we?
Yes, with a clean slate, starting fresh.
Yes. I mean, it was
my buzzer prepared.
good. It was becoming almost impossible to catch you, Robin. Unfortunately, so me and Alex had to veto you and or outvote you and go for a season or series two.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea, but
I do.
I'm fully expecting to come bottom of this season because I've lost my touch.
What? Based on what, Robin? Based on what? I mean, I do feel bad, though, that there was no end-of-season quiz. See, I've said season, then. End-of-season prize for you, Robin, because you did. You won fair and square. You trounced me and Martin. So I feel like you should get a reward or something, you know, a trophy or a countdown teapot or, you know...
You know,
£1 million. I don't know.
Blue pizza badge.
Teapot. Yeah.
All these are options. So, what have you guys learned this week?
Well, I have learned about Nutgate. Have you heard of this?
No.
Or
no.
Is this squirrels?
It doesn't actually involve squirrels at all. It's otherwise known as the Nut Rage Incident, and it involves. It's an air rage incident that occurred.
Okay.
That occurred in 2014 with the Korean Air vice president. Her name's Heather Cho. And basically, so she's the vice president of this airline, but this actually happened. It was on a Korean Air flight, but it happened in Kennedy International Airport in New York.
Okay.
Okay.
And she was traveling in first class, and
of course,
a cabin crew member served her a bag of peanuts.
Okay.
Or just a bag of nuts. I don't macadamia nuts. Sorry. Misinformation there, fake news.
Oof, get it right.
Can't trust you now, Alex.
But here comes the problem that she was not okay with. The macadamia nuts were served in bags as opposed to on a plate.
I vaguely remember this.
Yeah. And she was fuming. She was super angry at the fact that she was being served her macadamia nuts in a bag, like the peasants in Traveling and Economy, as opposed to on a plate like she was expecting. So she assaulted a cabin crew staff physically and forced the plane to go back, return to the airport. So it delayed it by about 20 minutes, apparently. And she forced this cabin crew member to get off the plane after assaulting him.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me she lost her job.
Well,
surely.
Yeah. So in the aftermath, she resigned from one of her executive positions at the airline, and then she was subsequently found guilty in a South Korean court of obstructing aviation safety, and she was given a 12-month prison sentence, of which she served five months. So she served 5 months in prison for this incident.
Still, I mean, that's good. I mean, that is good.
All for a bag of peanuts. Macadamia nuts! Sorry.
Also, Alex, who wants nuts on a plate? You mad person.
It's a weird thing. You're going to lose them.
I want them in a bag for that reason.
Yeah.
I can hold them and I can take one out one by one. I'm not just rolling around on a plate. That's madness.
I feel like she wanted some, you know, to feel more... like she wasn't in economy, you know. She wanted a first class experience.
I mean, I have some sympathy because, you know, if I were ever in my dreams to travel first class, you know, the amount you pay, I would want slightly better service in some respects. But I'm assuming as the vice president, did you say?
Yeah.
Of the airline, she was traveling for free. So it's like...
Yeah.
But also, like, as Martin said, like for expediency's sake, like for practical use, a bag is great for nuts. I would want them in a bag. I wouldn't want nuts on a plate. That's such a weird thing.
I mean, I feel like it's
really quite strange.
I feel like it's also for safety reasons for like people with nut allergies and stuff. You can't just have them all on plates being thrown about the plane. Yeah.
I've got to be honest. When you said the title of what you're going to talk about, the first thing I thought of was allergies. And especially when you mentioned being on a plane, I was like, oh, this is going to be about, I don't know, someone kicking off because someone rubbed a nut on them or something.
That would be a legitimate reason to kick off, yeah.
I can't believe she assaulted a crew member over that. I wonder if she was just having... You know, sometimes I try to imagine the best case scenario and give them like benefit of the doubt and say maybe they're just having a really bad day and that one thing pushed them over the edge. Doesn't excuse assaulting somebody else and turning a flight around and ordering someone off a plane when they're just doing their job. You know, if there's a problem with the nuts being served in bags, and as vice president of the airline, you should sort it out rather than blame the crew member.
Mm. Exactly.
But, you know, maybe she was just having a terrible day.
Well, also for your job, like, what are you doing? You know this is going to be in the news. You know you're going to get fired.
I mean, that's the weird thing. She's vice president. So if this is an issue, then she has the power to sort this out in a constructive way.
Yeah.
You know,
apparently
she can do this.
Sorry to interrupt, Robin. Apparently she...
No, I wasn't saying anything else.
She forced the chief, like, of the cabin crew to kneel down before her and beg for forgiveness.
What?
And she apparently repeatedly struck his knuckles with the edge of a digital tablet. So a pretty, you know, first-class way to physically assault someone.
She's nuts. I mean, she's crazy.
And then immediately dismissed him and ordered the plane to go back to the gate. And then as part of the controversy surrounding this incident, apparently as part of like Korean Air that were investigating this internally, they were ordered to delete all the records of it, of the incident. So I feel like this was basically a story. I mean, it's like the ultimate story of a mountain being made out of a molehill, isn't it? It's like,
yeah. Yes.
This didn't have to be anything and ended up being a massive news story with a 6-month prison sentence, 12 months prison sentence being made out of it. It's mad.
Yes. You know, Alex, I think you've just kind of conquered the podcast. There's no way anything we can say follows up that story. That's just mad, that story.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
She lost her marbles, or she lost her macadamias.
Very good, very good.
But from macadamias to meatloaf, because I learned this week that once the singer Meatloaf, you know, Bat Out of Hell,
yes,
and I Would Do Anything for Love, but I won't do that. Meatloaf once broke a piano and repaired it with chewing gum.
What? Okay. Exactly. While playing live or just in practice, do you reckon?
Just in rehearsal in the music room, the practice room, with his singer-songwriter Jim Steinman, who wrote Bat Out of Hell and I Would Do Anything for Love. And Steinman was at the piano playing it whilst he came, like, jamming, coming up with ideas with Meatloaf for songs. And they had an argument, and Meatloaf lost his temper so badly, he got so enraged that he flipped the piano. But Steinman's feet were on the pedals. So the pedal board and the pedals separated from the piano when Meatloaf tipped it over, just mm-hmm. tore off. But they were just like, oh, we broke the piano, but we need to keep playing. So they stuck it back together with chewing gum.
Wow. How does he get so angry? What is with people getting so angry? Like, imagine that. There's so many confusing facets to the story. Like, why did he go to the chewing gum to fix the piano first of all? Yeah. First and foremost,
it was all they had, apparently.
Is this before he became famous? Like, could he only afford chewing gum? Could he not afford glue?
I think this was after their first album, but they weren't. It was just they were embarrassed. They were in a practice room, I guess, in the studio. We're like, oh, we've broken the piano.
Oh, so it wasn't their piano.
Yeah, so they were just like, we're chewing gum. Let's just take it out and fix it. What he didn't say, well, I don't know, is if they successfully repaired it. They might have like stuck it back together and then walked out and been like, "Ooh-doo-doo, nothing to see here."
The thing is, like, was,
yeah,
chewing gum isn't a very good adhesive, really, is it? I can imagine it only really starts to work once it's dried.
Mm.
So yeah. You'd be waiting a little bit of time.
I imagine like the piano eventually had to be repaired properly, and they called in they called in a piano repairman, and he like kind of opened it up and was like, what has happened here? Oh, I see the problem. You've stuffed this with chewing gum.
He's like, well, we're halfway there. Just gets out a packet of Juicy Fruits and carries on.
Yeah. I see the problem. You've used airwaves when you should have used Hubba Bubba.
Yeah. Hubba Bubba. That is a throwback Hubba Bubba.
That is a great bubblegum. I love that.
Yeah. Bubblegum, I guess, not chewing gum. So it doesn't quite work, but you get the idea.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Oh, your problem is you've used bubblegum. You should have been using chewing gum. Much much stronger, yeah.
What else could work? Chewy things, like a...
I don't know, a gobstopper?
That's like, chewy, what about a refresher? Just chew up a bit.
Refresher? No.
Refresher, chew up a bit, and then use it as like a grouting.
No. You'll be laughed out of the piano repair shop with a refresher. Just like... you're not going anywhere with a refresher. Okay, piano's going to stay broken.
No, that's like, if you do it with a refresher, what you actually get is the engineer opens up the piano and is just like, "There's somebody's tooth stuck in this gum."
Beautiful. Well. From Meatloaf to beer, and this week I learned, or this week I'm telling you, so actually I didn't know this before this week, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about the beer that I'm drinking at the moment. This one, it's called Tint Meadow, and it is a beer that's made here in the UK by monks.
Ooh.
Which is cool. That's cool in itself.
That's right.
But, cool. And so what it is, it's called a Trappist beer as a result. So it's made by Trappist monks. But not all beers made in this style are known as Trappist beers. Others are also in a similar style are known as Abbey beers. But it has to be made specifically by active monks to be called a Trappist beer. And so when you're looking at these Belgian beers and you're thinking about...
There's lots of Trappist beers in Belgium, aren't there?
Yeah, a lot of these ones. A lot of them actually aren't made by monks. They're just made in like the style. They're made maybe at an abbey. So at the moment in the world, there's 14 breweries that are classed as Trappist breweries. They're recognised as such. There's 6 of them in Belgium, 2 in the Netherlands, 1 in Austria, 1 in the US, 1 in Italy, 1 in France, 1 in Spain, and then this one, which was actually founded quite recently in 2018, in England. So it's just a little bit of beer knowledge for you there. And actually, it has nothing to do with the Trappist beer, has nothing to do with the ingredients used. Like this one, for instance, uses all English ingredients, whereas, of course, the Belgian beers will use that, like Belgian yeast, and it will have a different flavour profile. But it's just interesting to know that to actually be called a Trappist beer, which is quite a famous term, has to be made by the monks themselves.
Is there any kind of difference to it? Do they add any secret ingredients, or does it any particular taste to it?
No, but it's often made on a smaller scale with ingredients they've harvested themselves. So a lot of Abbey beers will be made by bigger regional breweries, as opposed to kind of the more, what you call, I guess, crafty in a way. Like they are kind of like the original craft beers because they're made using generally local ingredients around where the monks live that they tend to grow themselves. And it's just on but tends to be on a much smaller scale as well. The original craft beers, not just Belgian either. It's interesting to know that there are monks working all around the world to make this beer.
Yeah, I didn't really know that was a thing. Like it feels like it's quite a traditional thing, even though this was founded quite recently, the one in the UK.
So this one's 2018. Yeah. One of the earliest ones in Belgium was Westmalle. They make Westmalle Double and Westmalle Triple, quite famous Belgian beers. And that was founded in 1836, like as a brewery. A lot of these monasteries have adapted to make beer because it's probably quite fun, but also it's actually a lot more profitable and sustainable for the monastery than traditional farming is right now, just because of the scale. Your profit margin on something like beer is actually a lot better than if you're a small scale farmer or dairy farmer or whatever. So that's why, especially these people who are, they're based in the Midlands at Tint Meadow, Mount St. Bernard Abbey, which is in the Midlands, in the middle of England. And they listened to an interview last year, I think it was. And the head brewer was like, we decided to change because to keep the monastery open and functioning, we needed to make this change. So he went around to a lot of the old Belgian ones, other monasteries, and asked them about how they were making their beer. And then also went to the one in Spain, which opened a couple of years earlier in 2016. So also a really recent opening brewery. And like they spoke about like how to get it off the ground and the challenges that they faced. And it also tastes really, really good too, which helps.
Nice. Oh, good for them. Yeah, sounds like a good way to adapt.
Indeed it does. So let's move on to the main topic of discussion this week, and we are speaking about the Ark of the Covenant. You excited?
Yeah,
I'm always excited to dive into an old mystery, especially one that's featured in Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Yeah.
There we go. I mean, 5 seconds and I've already brought it up.
I'm a bit disappointed that we haven't all donned hats for this. Robin, you haven't brought your whip.
I'm a bit concerned how you know Robin has a whip, but I'm going to move past that.
I'm assuming that Robin has a whip.
This isn't a joke, I have an Indiana Jones jacket as well. So, you know, I could be wearing it right now, but I'm not.
You've messed up here.
I've messed up massively.
So I'll give a bit of background to the Ark of the Covenant, and then if you guys want to provide a little bit of information about what could have happened to the Ark since it went missing, really, I guess. So the Ark of the Covenant is a gold-covered wooden chest with a lid cover on it, which is described in the Book of Exodus as having the two stone tablets, which make up the Ten Commandments. So according to Exodus, the book in the Old Testament, God instructed Moses on Mount Sinai during his 40-day stay upon the mountain, that basically to make this and to make the tabernacle, which is the tent, which Moses carried around, which then housed the Ark of the Covenant. So in terms of the construction and the makeup of the Ark itself, it's roughly 1 meter long and about 3/4 of a meter high and deep. So it's quite a big structure, really. Yeah, just over about 130 centimeters roughly in length. And it was to be covered on the outside in gold, and have gold mouldings around the outside of it. And then it was to also have 4 ornate gold rings, which to be attached to the corners of this, in order to basically be able to carry the Ark. And also then, of course, it has a golden lid called a caperet, which apparently translates as a cover or mercy seat, which is an interesting one. And then there were to be 2 golden cherubim to be placed above the Ark as well. So it's sort of like a crazy ornate piece, which you would imagine for something holding the 2 slabs of the Ten Commandments.
I remember finding this interesting last time we looked into this, that the Ark of the Covenant is essentially like this mythical item. It's like the Holy Grail or Pandora's box or something. But there is this very specific, you know, measurements of it and description of it. It very much feels like it was a real item at some point in time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and of course, going back to Moses' time is a long, long time ago. But when later you come on to when the Ark was finally lost, in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that long ago, really, is it? In terms of historical record. So according to Hebrews, the Ark contained 3 things. So as I said, it contained these tablets of the Ten Commandments, but also contained a golden pot that had manna inside it, and then also a rod called Aaron's rod, which you know, an ornate piece there too. So these 3 things were included within the Ark of the Covenant. In terms of its powers, it had the power to strike people dead. So there's a story later on where the Ark's being taken to Zion, and one of the drivers of the Ark, who's carrying it along, called Uzzar, he put his hand on the Ark to steady it and was struck dead, according to legend, by God for touching it. So this is like an incredibly powerful piece. But has the ability to kill people who disrespect it, which is kind of a scary one when we think about potentially finding it nowadays. And of course, Indiana Jones showed us that you don't necessarily want to be opening the Ark of the Covenant.
Opening it, I understand, but just accidentally touching it, that's a bit harsh.
It is a little bit harsh, isn't it? Yeah, and also to steady it. It's like, do you want this thing to fall on the ground or not? According to the Bible, it's created by Moses, and then it was carried by the Israelites during Moses' 40 years of wandering in the desert. So he's wandering around with the with this ark, and when he's not carrying it, it's safely housed in the tabernacle that he's made too, in this sacred tent. And so after Moses' death, Joshua is leading everyone, the Israelites, towards the promised land. And he arrives at the River Jordan. And at this point, the Ark is carried in front of the people as a signal for their advance. So it's quite a grand gesture of these are the chosen people. They're going to the promised land. And you know, here's the Ten Commandments and these amazing things that are housed inside. It's a pretty ornate and, you know, symbol to the power of God as well, which is pretty crazy. And so in the Book of Joshua, a little bit later, it says that the Ark was really key in the Battle of Jericho in 1400 BCE. Actually, I think it's April 20th, 1400 BCE, which is incredibly precise.
Very specific.
Considering a lot of the dates at this kind of time are like very much approximately between then and now. Anyway,
yeah.
which is pretty crazy. So it was used to break down the walls of Jericho alongside the seven trumpets sounding and the walls falling, which is again just shows the power of this of the Ark of the Covenant. And then again, according to the Bible, a few years later, the elders of Israel decided to take the Ark onto the battlefield when they're fighting against the Philistines. Mm. And unfortunately, they were defeated really heavily. They lost approximately 30,000 men, according to legend. And the Philistines captured the Ark and basically took it back with them. But this did not end well for them. Plagues were frequent when they had the Ark in their possession. There were lots of people getting tumors, so it seemed like, you know, potentially bubonic plague. And also they had infestations of mice and rats, which caused no end of trouble for them. And so they had the Ark, for according to the Bible, for 7 months, and they were advised by their elders to return it to the Israelites. They were thinking, like, we don't want anything to do with this. This is not worth our time. So they returned it with offerings of golden images of these tumors and mice that they'd been afflicted by, letting the Israelites know that basically have it back. This isn't working out for us.
Yeah.
So the Ark was set up by Joshua in the field of the Beth Shemite, and the Beth Shemites offered sacrifices to the Ark and to God, and some of them gazed at the Ark, and as punishment, 70 of them, or, you know, according to certain records, 50,070, which is quite a big difference. But anyway, quite a lot of them were smited by the Lord as a result of this. So, you know, according to legend, there was huge power in the Ark, and you certainly shouldn't be staring at it or stopping it from falling on the floor, as our earlier man found out. The Beshemites then sent the Ark to the city of Kirjath Jimin, which is about 15 kilometers from Jerusalem, and it was kept there for approximately 20 years. And then when King David came to the throne, he removed the Ark from this place and brought it to Zion, where he put the Ark in this tent he had prepared for it and offered it sacrifices, you know, doing all the same things that the Beshemites had done previously. And then a little while later, David had to flee from Jerusalem, and he ordered Zadok, one of his priests, to return it to Jerusalem, where his son King Solomon, who took over after he had died, worshipped the Ark in hopes that his dream of God promising him wisdom would come true. And then a little while later, around 970 BCE, when King Solomon was trying to construct his temple, he created this special inner room known as the Kodesh HaKodashim, where he basically put the Ark. He had it dedicated to the Ark and the original tablets of the Ten Commandments. So an incredibly special room for this amazing, mysterious, godly Ark of the Covenant. So about 400 years later, in 587 BCE, the Babylonians came and destroyed Jerusalem and destroyed Solomon's temple in the process. And from here out, there's no real record of exactly what happened to the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, there's an ancient Greek version of the Bible that says that the Babylonians took it away, but it doesn't mention exactly what happened to the Ark. So I was wondering if you guys could tell me a little bit more about the theories about what happened to the Ark after the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem.
Well, this is where the mystery really begins in terms of what happened to the Ark, because, as you say, Martin, the Bible doesn't record what happened to the Ark. It never mentions the Ark after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. So, obviously, there are two possible outcomes, which is either the Babylonians took it with them or they didn't. And actually, early scholars of the history of Judaism, early rabbis who studied the history of Judaism, and who wrote in the first few centuries of the Common Era, so around the time Jesus' birth to around 600 CE, had various suggestions about what happened to the Ark. Some rabbis said that it must have been taken to Babylon by the Babylonians. Others said that it was hidden, either somewhere in the Temple of Solomon, or rather under the Temple of Solomon, in a labyrinthine network of tunnels, cellars, like wood piles and things like that, under the temple, or it was hidden outside Jerusalem. Because an important thing to note is that the siege of Jerusalem by the Babylonians lasted for nearly 2 years. So it's possible that in this time, or perhaps even before then, somebody snuck the ark out of Jerusalem and hid it somewhere else. So one suggestion is that the ark was taken to Mount Nebo, which is on the eastern, I think, bank of the River Jordan, and about due east of Jerusalem itself, and it's, I think, 47 miles away. So it's definitely a doable distance.
Mm-hmm.
So there are theories that it was taken there and hidden on Mount Nebo. And Mount Nebo is a significant site for the Jews because it's where Moses died, I think. He looked out upon the promised land from Mount Nebo. And in fact, in 1981, an archaeologist called Tom Krotzer claimed to have carried out some excavation on Mount Nebo and to have found the Ark of the Covenant. He said he found a gold-covered rectangular box in a cave on Mount Nebo. And he said that they took many photographs of it. However, he didn't produce the Ark itself. And when people asked him to take them to the cave where he found it, he didn't. And he said it was because he didn't think it was proper and right for people to find the Ark in case it brought great doom, just like the poor fellow who touched the Ark and was struck down by God. Or the Philistines, indeed, who were plagued by many curses for taking the Ark away from the Jews. But problem is, of course, that Tom Krotzer claimed to have found this in 1981. And what came out in 1981? Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's good timing.
Great timing, isn't it? So
imagine if he actually did find it and that film released. People and he's like, for God's sake, why did this have to happen now? Yeah.
Damn
no
it.
One's going to believe me.
He also claimed to have found Noah's Ark and the Tower of Babel.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So maybe take it with a pinch of salt.
Whoa. Is this Nathan Drake?
Maybe, yeah. This guy's either had the most incredible career and life ever, or he's a charlatan.
He never brought a camera with him, or just never released the photos.
Just personal, my private album. You know, just going on my bookcase. You know,
it's too dangerous.
Sitting there.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit suspicious to me. But,
a little bit.
That is a very logical place for it to be, though.
It is actually. It is a fairly logical thing. And it's even more logical because the second book of Maccabees in the Bible, written around 100 BCE, I think, says that the prophet Jeremiah took the ark and buried it in a cave on Mount Nebo. So it actually is, according to the Bible itself, the most logical place for it to be buried. But that story might be unfamiliar to people in the Western world, because I don't think the second book of Maccabees, is canonical to the Old Testament in the Protestant Bible.
Hmm.
So people who were brought up in the Protestant Christian tradition probably aren't familiar with this story. But because we don't know if it actually was taken to Mount Nebo, there have naturally been a whole bunch of other claims about where the Ark ended up. Some people said it was taken to Rome and kept at the papal seat in the Basilica of St. John Lateran, sorry for my mispronunciation there, until the Basilica burned down in the 14th century. No one knows what happened to the Ark after that point. I think the implication is that maybe it was burnt down with the Basilica. I mean, that makes a certain amount of sense. That's the center of the Christian church, Rome, so you know, it's where the Pope lives, so why not? However, fans of Dan Brown and conspiracy theories might prefer other claims or the rumours that the Ark was taken to France, particularly to Chartres Cathedral, by the Knights Templar.
Mm.
Or it might have been taken to the village of Rennes-le-Château by the Freemasons. And according to the Freemason theory, the Ark was taken from Rennes-le-Château to the USA at the outbreak of the First World War. And personally, I don't know about you guys, but I think the idea that the Ark is in somewhere secret in the USA is very wishful thinking.
I mean, everyone wants to claim it's in their own country, right?
Exactly, yeah. And there's no evidence for any of these claims. It's just people seemingly plucking things out of thin air.
Yeah.
Well, there were a couple that actually caught my eye that I wanted to bring up. I do agree that there's, you know, every country wants to claim it, but there's a couple that caught my eye for very specific reasons. So one location that claims to have the Ark of the Covenant, and they actually know where it is, it's in a church and they have it, is in a town called Aksum in Ethiopia. So this is an Orthodox Tewahedo church who claim to possess the Ark of the Covenant in a church called Our Lady Mary of Zion. This was quite an interesting one. So basically the story goes that the Kebra Nagast, which is basically Ethiopia's chronicle of their royal line, says that the Queen of Sheba, one of Ethiopia's first rulers, traveled to Jerusalem during the reign of King Solomon. So this is before the sacking of the city by the Babylonians, a few hundred years before, I believe.
I mean, she had a famous romance with Solomon, didn't she?
Well, exactly, yeah. And when she was returning from Jerusalem, she gave birth to Solomon's son, Menelik. And later, Menelik went to visit his father, and on his return journey was accompanied by the firstborn sons of some of, some Israelite nobles, who, unbeknownst to him, had stolen the Ark of the Covenant and brought it with them to Ethiopia. And when Menelik learned of the theft, he reasoned that since, you know, the Ark hadn't created, you know, doomed the country or, you know, doomed his rule or anything, he said that God wanted me to have it, basically. That was his reasoning, which is an interesting reasoning. I imagine a lot of thieves have have that reasoning. If I'm not getting caught, then God wants me to have this Mars bar.
I mean, it kind of explains a little bit about why it wasn't ever mentioned in the Babylonian conquest, right? It wasn't ever mentioned that it was taken if it wasn't there.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's also this kind of historic link with the, you know, Queen of Sheba and King Solomon. So it's interesting. I thought it was interesting. And this Kebra Nagast, which is this chronicle, is dated to the 13th century. So it's like, it's 1,000 years after these events.
Yeah.
However, it is apparently, was apparently written based on a Coptic manuscript from the 4th century. And that's apparently an account of events from something even earlier. So it could be linked to the time frame when all these events were happening. However, the one kind of drawback with this, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying, that, you know, every country is going to want to claim ownership of this. And that's that the Kebra Nagast is kind of intended to legitimize the Solomonic dynasty, this dynasty of kings, to legitimize that they've come from, you know, King Solomon. So it claiming that the Ark was transferred to Ethiopia and that God, you know, divinely, you know, said that it was okay, essentially, would be a kind of hugely symbolic and powerful message to send to the people of Ethiopia, you know, that these kings and queens are, you know, divinely chosen, I guess, by God.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's useful as a propaganda tool as well, I guess.
Yeah. Isn't there a professor who says that they saw the Ethiopian Ark back in the 1940s before it was banned from the public eye, and said it was nothing more than a medieval wooden bowl?
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Well, so they actually, this was in this church, was it?
Yeah, before it was exclusive and people couldn't go in. He says, this white Western professor says, he went in there in the 1940s and saw it and said it was nothing authentic.
Nothing. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, Yeah, I mean, they do forbid people from seeing this in this church. Apparently, there's throughout the centuries, there's been one virgin priest who is the guardian of the ark, and they are the only person who is allowed to see the ark, and no one else is allowed to see it. And they're chosen from birth to be the guardian of the ark.
Do you think that the guardian of the ark, or, you know, do you think he genuinely believes that this is the Ark of the Covenant?
I would hope to say, really.
For his sake, because it must be difficult to spend your entire life guarding something.
Well, that's the thing, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, talk about having a being a I don't know, a careerist. I mean, they talk about career politicians, don't we?
Yes.
I'm just guarding the Ark. It's just my job, mate. I don't know. It's,
talk about job security, though. That's like,
I mean, that's it, right?
They're always going to need you there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Yeah, you say it's a propaganda tool. And I guess that would completely disappear if people were able to see it and potentially discredit it, right? So there's definitely a lot of value in them not showing anyone, for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm surprised that no one's tried to break in and take a picture at least.
Or maybe they have, and the guardian has caught them.
Yeah, this one guardian.
There is another place in Africa that claims to have the Ark.
Oh yeah.
And it's actually an ethnic group of people called the Lemba people in South Africa and Zimbabwe, who claim that their ancestors carried the Ark from Israel to Zimbabwe and hid it in a cave in the mountains there. And there's British Professor Tudor Parfitt, I think is his name, who's actually, his profession, his actual job is studying the history of the descendants of Jewish peoples around the world. So he goes to different countries all over the world and studies people who are descended from the people of Israel, what we now consider Israel. And so he followed the stories of the Lemba people, who are a collection of tribes in Zimbabwe, and he actually carried out DNA analysis and found that the one tribe that claims to have Jewish ancestry does actually have genes from the Levant region, which is modern Syria, Turkey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and they claim to have the Ark in the mountains, but they also have a story that the Ark self-destructed not long after they arrived in Zimbabwe, and that they used the remains of the Ark to carve out a new Ark. yeah, I know. And an archaeologist actually went into the mountains back in the 20th century, when Zimbabwe was still under European rule, and found what the Lemba people claimed to be the Ark. And this Professor Tudor Parfitt recently had it radiocarbon dated to around the year 1350. So that's very medieval.
Yeah.
But the year 1350 is around the time that the what they call Great Zimbabwe civilization collapsed. Became more tribal and eventually became conquered by the Europeans several hundred years later.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that their story of it self-destructing coincides with the end of the Zimbabwe civilization. Mm-hmm. And there's this tribe who are actually descended from probably Jews.
That is interesting. That's Zimbabwe. a lot of kind of evidence there, really.
It's interesting,
so old. Yeah, that is interesting. I love that, though. It's self-destructed. They dropped it, didn't they? They dropped it.
I mean, yeah, if they were the descendants, then I imagine that it wouldn't... Did they give a reason why it's self-destructed? Because, because you think... I mean, yeah, if you look at the Philistines, they had a lot of issues with it, didn't they, in terms of the plagues and mice? You think that if they weren't the chosen people for whatever reason... to have this ownership over the Ark, then it would cause similar issues with them as opposed to just self-destructing. So I'd be interested to know their theory about why this was the case.
I feel like that claim is fairly plausible, but still doesn't quite ring true to me. I think that's more evidence that maybe this tribe has got Jewish ancestry rather than that they have the Ark, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with the dating back to the medieval period, it's like, fairly... That's
obviously not the Ark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fairly clear-cut.
In terms of ancestry and claims being made based on where, like, people who have Jewish descendants from that area, another claim is that the Ark of the Covenant ended up in Ireland. And this one I thought was interesting because this wasn't the Irish government or anyone claiming to have the Ark of the Covenant. This was actually a claim made by a group of academics in London. It was the Anglo-Israel Association from London. They claimed to have found historical documents that traced a Hebrew named Iarbanel migrating to Ireland around the late 580s BC, around the time when Jerusalem was sacked by the Babylonians. And the theory is that this person, Iarbanel, was sent to kind of find a hiding place for the Ark of the Covenant.
So one person's arrived in Ireland.
Well, I'm guessing they've sent him and a crew of people. Yeah,
from the rough region. They're like, yeah, probably the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, but there's so basically, what I find interesting about this is how this. I don't know. There's more of a story to this one. So, in 1899, this organization, this association, went on an expedition to the Hill of Tara in Ireland, which is the location that they believed is a hugely symbolic, like,
It's where intermedieval kings were crowned. It was there.
Yeah,
is a hugely significant site politically and religiously in ancient Ireland. Yeah,
exactly. And it's not really it's not really associated with Christianity. It's more of a pagan.
Site, definitely, right? Got pagan overtones.
Yeah. So it's interesting, but they believed that the Hill of Tara was the location of the Ark of the Covenant, and they tried to excavate the site. However, this happened around the time when Ireland was trying to reclaim a lot of its cultural sites, and so they basically had a 3-year expedition that was cut short. By mass protests in Ireland of people that were understandably a bit annoyed that these people were digging up
destroy the hill
one of their most significant cultural historical sites to try and find the Ark of the Covenant.
And they've got no evidence for this. They just plucked out of thin air and said, oh, you know, they went to Ireland. Yeah, there was a guy who went to Ireland.
I'm just shocked they got permission.
Well, this is
the excavation. I don't think
back then it was... This was like really... In Ireland, this was a big moment of them trying to reclaim their cultural like historical sites. I don't think they previously... It wasn't that big of a deal to them, but this was like an actual period known for them reclaiming their historical sites and identity, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of bad timing.
Yes. Bad timing, to say the least. But
good timing, depending on whose side you're on.
Yeah, yeah. So that seems incredibly unlikely.
It's a bit of a stretch.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But we should probably mention a recent news story from December 2019 about some archaeologists from Tel Aviv University in Israel who found a 3,100-year-old temple only, 12 miles south of Jerusalem? Very, very close.
Intriguing.
And claimed to have found a big stone slab, a shrine, essentially, which is the appropriate size for the Ark of the Covenant. The only problem is that this temple is 3,100 years old, and we know that the Ark of the Covenant probably disappeared around 2,500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So... my question is, if this is really the resting place of the Ark of the Covenant, then why did they build it 600 years before they needed it?
Good point. I mean, it could be an existing temple for something else that then they thought, that could be used for the Ark of the Covenant.
They retrofitted it, yeah.
So they repurposed it. Ark of the Covenant.
Say it's a bit of lick of paint. Save us having to build another one.
This is a hugely, important. this is a divinely powerful artifact from God.
Yeah, well,
that's been known to kill people at the drop of the hat. If God's seen us displeased, and you're saying they repurposed this temple,
gave
it a lick of paint, and God was happy with that.
Bit of wallpaper and thrifty. I'm sure you'd appreciate it. It seems unlikely, doesn't it, that to be at actually the Ark of the Covenant. What an amazing discovery, regardless, though.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Imagine if hypothetical. Imagine we went on an in-plane site, let's say, and discovered the Ark of the Covenant somehow in, I don't know where we'd go, but we discovered it. And it was there.
Ireland.
I think that's right.
In Ireland, at the Hill of Tara. Would you, and it's right there in front of you, would you touch it? Would you try and open it? What would you do?
I don't know. I don't think I would.
I don't think so. I don't think I would.
Oh, and that's a shame, because I was going to say I'd let one of you two try.
Well, Alex, we're talking about touching and opening things. When we went to that, what was it? The most haunted objects in the world. We went to that evening.
Oh yeah.
I wasn't the one going around touching the voodoo boxes. That was you.
Oh, what was it? Yeah, a gin box.
It was a genie. Oh goodness, yeah, that was you. So if anyone's going to be touching the Ark of the Covenant,
I don't think anything bad's happened since then. I mean, the global pandemic's happened.
Well, that's happened.
I don't think that's my fault.
That was last Halloween. You did it, Alex. You cursed
there are doubts there now. There are doubts in my mind.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So, the Ark of the Covenant, what do you guys at home think? Where do you think it could be? Do you think that any of these particular theories are likely? I mean, from what we discussed, it seems that we may just never know where it is, or at least with these leads that we currently have, we might not get the answers that we're looking for. So let us know what you think in the poll above and the comment section down below. And speaking of comments, let's get some of your comments from this week. So I have a comment from Irish Jester, and this is on our last week's video about happiness and the happiest place in the world. Spoilers. Actually, no, I won't do spoilers. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look. And this person says, if they're measuring things like healthcare access, etc., it should be called quality of life. Life? Should be called quality of life, not happiness. And I think I agree
with this.
I think that happiness is such a vague term. We spoke about it last week. But yes, quality of life for those kind of things makes more sense than happiness. I mean, you're happy if you're healthy and alive, but your quality of life probably sums up that better. So yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
that's
and it
true.
Would be useful too, because you could use that. You could present that to people and say, look at the quality of your life. We can objectively measure it. And in light of that fact, how happy do you feel?
Exactly. And I think happiness maybe is a more of a colloquial thing just for the title of the report, right? It's kind of people maybe are more attracted to the title being about happiness as opposed to being about quality of life. It's less dry, isn't it? But probably not as accurate.
I don't know, because I know happy is such, like, happiness is such a vague term. But then if you're trying to make that, like, take into account all of those factors that are quality of life more than happiness. So, like, does, trust in government equate to quality of life? I don't know.
That's the thing. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's just more of a broader thing. Pretty vague and not particularly helpful, but I guess that's what they're going for.
Yes. And maybe there should be then a few different league tables, as it were, based on the different variables. It shouldn't just be one based on happiness. It should be, okay, quality of life, trust in the system, or whatever else you want to have. It would be maybe more useful to split it down into a few categories, which are still broad but encompass a few of the things that we were speaking about last week.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
On that note about trust in the system and trust in your government, my comment is from the same podcast episode, Do You Live in the Happiest Country on Earth? And it's from Ian William Davidson, who I think you brought up the fact that the Scottish government sends new parents a kind of survival kit for their
yes.
babies.
Yes,
yeah. Or maybe it was Martin brought it up, I can't remember.
Well, I think I mentioned it in relation to Denmark, and then Alex said Scotland also do it.
I wasn't sure if they did.
Yeah, well, Ian confirms that we are quite correct about the baby boxes given to new parents in Scotland.
Oh, nice.
And it only costs 8 million a year, or in other words, 0.1% of banker bonuses in 2020.
I mean, yeah, that puts it in context, doesn't it?
Yeah. And he says, however, Ian does say that, unlike some, I'm not always the biggest fan of the Scottish government, but they don't have to try particularly hard to look like geniuses next to the UK. what he means is, The Westminster government. Yeah, he does say though that if we, as us three, ever move to Scotland, he thinks we might be able to become honorary Scottish on the proviso that we rename the channel. Just interesting.
I've got a bit of Scottish blood. I know that you have too, right?
Like my grandparents are Scottish.
Yeah, I've got Scottish relatives.
Yeah, there we
Let's
go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's move.
With me, I'm talking a very, very small amount. You know, enough to support Andy Murray if he's winning.
Yeah, I'd genuinely be up for moving to Scotland.
Oh yeah, 100%. That's my dream. I want to move there. Go to the Highlands, live in peace and quiet. Oh, though Glasgow's very nice. That's where my family comes from. And 100%, like if Scotland leaves the UK, I'm gonna try to get a Scottish passport. It's gonna happen.
Well, I've got a comment from Alexander Spencer, who just adds, any place is the happiest place if you have whiskey and cigars. And I'm all for that.
You've got whiskey now, haven't you, Alex?
I do have a whiskey now, yeah. I don't have a cigar, though. I'm not in for that, but whiskey, totally, yeah.
It sounds like a descendant of Churchill, doesn't it?
Alexander
whiskey
Spencer.
Brandy and cigars.
Fair enough. Fair enough, So, shall we move on to this week's quiz?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes.
As always, it's 10 questions plus a bonus question if we're tied. And this week's topic is general knowledge.
Ooh.
But before we get started, I do need to hear your buzzers to avoid confusion. So, Alex, what's your buzzer this week?
I've gone for something different this week. I feel like I've been overusing Orson Welles recently, so I've gone for a classic video.
Benton! Benton! Oh, Jesus Christ! Benton!
Beautiful.
If anyone hasn't seen that video, I would thoroughly recommend it.
So good.
Surely everyone's seen that video.
Eight years ago now. It's quite. Wow. It's getting there. It's quite old. That was an amazing video. A man just chasing his dog through a park.
Benton! Screaming. Benton! Jesus Christ!
Benton!
And Robin, what have you gone for this week?
Is there anyone here that wants to make contact? Anyone is in these words?
Come on, Robin.
Show yourselves.
Show yourselves.
Rudika! I feel like there's a lot of pressure on this week because it's a blank slate. I don't want Robin
it's
to get out the gates,
yeah.
You know, with a win.
I mean, that's the thing. If you lose this week, you either have 100% record or 0%. There's nothing in between.
There's a lot riding on this now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Robin has been losing ever since we started this podcast. So now's a chance to take the lead.
Well, that's it. That's a good point.
The leaderboard. I have lost quizzes, but yeah, in the leaderboard, yeah.
You've always been at the top dog.
Been at the top. Yeah.
Here's where everything changes.
I hope so.
Question number one.
Okay.
What is Alex Brown's mum's middle name?
What?
I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, one, why? That's incredibly personal. And it's almost like... You know, it's almost like you're trying to hack into my account. You're trying to get my details. What was Alex Brown's first childhood pet?
A maiden name. Best school friend. No. That was a poor attempt at a joke about trying to make you start off on a winning foot. No, okay. The real question one is coming up now.
Okay.
Okay. Number one. It's widely acknowledged that the COVID-19 originated from Wuhan in China. But this week, China said that the virus originated in another country. Which country have they blamed?
Benton!
I've no idea.
This is just a guess, just based on politics, but did they say the US?
They did not say the US, no.
Oh, they didn't say
good the guess, US. Good guess, I can understand why. But no.
So that would have been my guess as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Who else doesn't China like? Who are their cues?
Is there anyone here that wants to make contact?
I'm so upset with you.
The weird thing, Robin, is when you use that buzzer, I kind of think it's Alex speaking.
Yeah. I realise it's a strategic disadvantage, but it's just so funny. I'm going to say South Korea.
No.
Oh.
No, not South Korea. I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
Or at least to get you along the right tracks from what you've said so far. Mm. It's not a country that there are odds with or loggerheads with, not that I know of, but it is one that has been affected by COVID-19 quite significantly.
Okay.
These words... Show yourselves.
Robin.
Spain.
Spain is right.
What the hell?
Really? That's out of nowhere.
Spain. They've blamed Spain. Apparently they took some tests, which have now been put into question, that that showed that there were cases of coronavirus in Spain as early as March 2019. But there are issues with the tests, and it seems like it's a whole load of bollocks.
That sounds unlikely.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, a bit of a diversion tactic there. Okay, question number two. What is the little mascot, you know, the robot alien thing, on Reddit? What's it called?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh,
Alex.
I'll be honest, I buzzed without knowing the answer.
Yeah.
Little alien.
It's like a robot. Yeah, it's like a robot alien.
Little alien. Yeah. That's his name. Mm. No, I don't know.
I'm afraid not.
I buzzed without knowing. I hoped that it would come to me. I've definitely heard it before, but...
Did anyone die here?
Robin.
Red?
No, it's not red. That's red it.
Darn it.
No. what's a way I can give a clue for this? I'm not sure I can, actually. I think it's a know it or you don't. So it's called Snoo.
Oh,
Snoo.
I would never
S-N-O-O. Yeah. Question number three. The Last of Us 2 sold 4 million copies in the first 3 days of its release, breaking the record for the fastest-selling PlayStation first-party game. But which game did it break the record of?
Is Dick Turpin in these woods? Show yourself!
Yes, Robin.
I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to say it's another Naughty Dog game called Uncharted 4.
No. That would be correct if we were just including the US.
Oh, really?
That was going to be my
but
guess,
worldwide.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I've got a real chance here. I'm looking behind. What games have I got?
Looking at his game collection.
Yeah. I don't know, you know. Fastest selling. Oh,
like
oh my god.
Exclusive.
I think I've got it. I bloody got it. And I actually don't own this game. But is it Spider-Man?
It's Spider-Man.
Yes!
Of course.
Spider-Man.
People love Spider-Man.
I own that game as well. Yeah.
They do.
I did not know that. Spider-Man was such a huge hit.
Spider-Man, very popular. Very popular. Yeah, so question number four. 2-0 to Alex.
It's definitely not, but I would definitely appreciate that.
Totally 1-1.
It's 1-1 to both of you. Sorry. I forgot about the Spain question. Question number four. What type of instrument is a cajon? Or if you're from the UK, cajon.
I believe that's a guitar, Martin.
You're wrong.
I said it with such confidence, though. If I was right, that would have looked really good.
I was convinced you were correct. That's crazy. Okay, well, that sounds like a Spanish word. What kind of instruments did the Spanish like that isn't the guitar?
Show yourself.
A completely wild guess. Is it some kind of pipe?
No. Wood pipe. No, it's not. Oh. It's not some kind of pipe.
I also feel like that's a bit too vague. You need to be a bit. You can't just have woodwind as a
I'm looking for that kind of thing. We can go for the specific or the type of instrument. It's fine.
Can we have a clue, please? Cajon. Or should we just have a clue?
Okay, I can give you a clue. You sit on it.
Right! Benton! Oh,
yes.
Out. Is it drums?
It is. It's a drum. It's one of those ones you sit on a wooden block with four sides. You sit on it and you tap it below.
Cool.
It's a drum. Percussion. Okay. Percussion instrument. Yeah.
Lovely.
Nice. Yeah. Should have guessed that because you play the drums, Mark.
Yeah. I've never had a cajon, though.
A cajon?
Or a cajon.
Cajon.
Yeah. Never had one. But, you know, maybe one day. Maybe one day. Question number 5. Which river flows through the city of Nottingham?
Right! Benton!
Is Dick Turpin here?
I think that was Alex.
Yep.
Is it? I don't know rivers. Sign?
It is not the Sign.
Is that even a river in the UK? I don't know.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Is there one called S-E-I-N-E? Is that one?
Were you just kind of repeating the Boudicca? Show us a sign!
Maybe. I don't know.
My guess would be the Trent.
It is the Trent.
Oh, yeah.
Trent. There's, of course, Nottingham Trent University too, isn't there?
Oh, it's a river in France, the Seine. That's what I was thinking of.
The Seine.
That's the Seine.
Yeah, it runs through Paris, doesn't it?
It's a very German pronunciation. I feel like it's a bit inappropriate.
So, two all. Question number 6. Who is older, Alex Winter or Keanu Reeves? So,
right.
Bill or Ted?
Oh,
I think Alex got that.
So, I have a guess, Alex?
Yes.
Alex Winter.
Robin, what's your guess?
Keanu Reeves.
God. It's Keanu Reeves.
Why did I say that?
55 and Alex Winter's 54. So they're quite close. Quite close in age.
The same. Yeah.
But Keanu Reeves is slightly older. So that is 3-2 to Robin.
But the whole thing is that he's immortal, so it was going to be like, oh, but he's older. Mm. Yeah. Good one. Oh. Sorry, I'm
devastated.
I am a bit, yeah.
No. There's definitely time for you to take this. There's definitely time.
This is 3-2, and there's 4 questions left, but one of them is worth 3 points.
Whoa. Yes. Okay.
So, question number 7. Mm-hmm. Trump is known for spending like shit tons of money on playing golf, right? He spends a lot of taxpayers' money on hitting up the course, but he is not the golfiest, yes, that's a word that I'm inventing, president of all time. Who is the golfiest president of all time?
Ooh.
Hmm.
Wow, that's an interesting question.
Hmm.
Right! Benton! Oh,
yes.
Right.
Alex.
Just an absolute shot in the dark. George Bush Sr.
No.
Oh. Don't know why. He just called out to me.
Boudicca? Is there anyone?
I'm going to go with George Bush Jr.
No, he a lot of it was made of him saying, watch this drive and hitting the golf ball. But he actually didn't play much at all when he was in office compared to most other presidents.
Oh.
Which is interesting.
Oh, so this question is about which president played the most golf whilst they're in office?
Yes, while they're in office.
Ah, okay.
Yes. I'll give you a quick clue. Early 20th century.
Wow. Woodrow Wilson?
It is Woodrow Wilson. So Woodrow Wilson played golf while in office on average every 2.4 days.
Wow.
Whereas Trump is 4.2 days. how often he plays golf.
Still.
Although, how much has that been affected by the pandemic?
Well, yeah, good point. But yeah, and also, the cost of Trump's golfing outings are actually quite a lot more than Woodrow Wilson's will have been.
Yeah, it goes all the way to Mar-a-Lago with a security detail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah.
Still, that's impressive. That's a lot of golf.
It is a lot of golf. Every couple of days, a couple of times a week while in office. And golf takes a long time to play as well.
It does.
Right? You're out
the notoriously, it takes like all day.
Yes. So that's twice a week. Every 2.4 days. That's probably the best part of 2 days of your working week. 2 out of 5. Although I imagine he probably works weekends. Wilson, not Trump. Yeah. Question number 8. So that's 4-2, is that? Yes.
Feels wrong.
Yeah.
Question number 8. And this one is worth 3 points.
Oh, God.
So, Alex, last week in the quiz, you brought up... Oh, sorry, Robin. You brought up the 3 most popular sites in the world today. Okay?
Yeah.
I've got the same question, but my year is 1996. What are the 3 most popular websites in the world?
Oh, wow.
Anyone is in these woods, show yourselves.
Yes, Robin.
AOL.com.
Okay.
Norton Internet Security.
Okay.
Nah. Not thus. Your second guess was Norton.
I don't even know what websites existed. And I've no idea after AOL, to be honest.
Okay. You've got 1 point. Alex, your turn. AOL was the top one.
Can I guess another, just like one more? Or
you
like
can,
one
you can, you can, you can guess 3, because Robin got 3 guesses. So you can guess 3.
I'm going to guess eBay.
Okay.
I'm going to guess... Google's probably Yahoo.
Okay.
I don't know what else would there be.
Yeah. What was the internet in 1996?
I'll guess Google. I don't think it is, but.
Okay, you've also got 1 point. Yahoo was the second one. The third one at the time was also by Yahoo, but it was called GeoCities, which was a web hosting service website. So, of course, with everyone making websites, the web hosting site was really popular.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that one.
Amazing.
No, that one was much more difficult. So
I thought Yahoo started later. That's crazy.
Yeah, apparently not. Apparently they were really popular at this time. 5-3.
Can I bring it back?
You can, but you have to get the next 2 right. Question number 9. How many time zones are there in Australia?
Right! Ben Pod! Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes, Alex.
4.
Okay.
That was my guess, but I'm going to go with 3.
Is it closest wins?
Yes. 3 is right. I don't know what's happening. Have you just slammed everything down on the table? Is he gone?
I think he's gone.
Is he just disappeared?
I've come back, yeah. Okay. I forgot you can't actually see me, so that was probably a bit scary.
I thought you might have shot yourself. It's a loud bag.
Every single episode, Alex has a gun on the table, just loaded, ready to go.
Ready to go. If I lost the quiz, that's it.
You've been doing well the last few weeks, mate. Yes, Australia has 3 time zones. Australian Central Standard Time, Australian Eastern Standard Time. Oh, sorry, I got that wrong. Australian Central Standard Time and Australia. Oh, screw it, there's 3 time zones. On to question number 10. 6-3.
Can't believe you've done this.
Sorry, Alex.
Don't apologize.
I was going to guess 4, and then you made me choose a different number.
Shut your mouth.
Question 10.
I'm laughing, but I am crying inside.
That was funny. Ted, what is the most northerly capital city in Europe?
Oh.
Did anyone die here? Is Dick Turpin here?
I'm going to assume this is a trick question, and the answer is Moscow.
No.
Oh.
Is it Helsinki?
No.
Oh.
Really?
Is Dick Turpin in these woods?
I think that's my favourite.
I think it's the slight pause before Dick Turpin. It just makes it.
In these woods?
Is Dick Turpin in these woods? Is it Reykjavik?
It is. It is Reykjavik.
Yeah.
Solid. I mean, it's some people debate whether it's actually in Europe, don't they? But I think politically it's kind of included, isn't it? So I went for that. Wow.
I'll go for that.
You've done very well, Robin. That is 7-3.
Thank you. Maybe.
Blimey. Okay, we'll go for the bonus question because there's still pride to be. There's still pride to be.
Didn't seem like a necessary thing to say, to be honest. There was the 3-point quiz. Oh yeah,
it was one all.
We got 1 inch. I thought Alex got 2 in that one. But yeah, 1 inch. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go for the bonus question regardless, as we always do, because it's fun to do.
It's fun to do. It's great to have it.
So, bonus question: the most populated city in the world is Tokyo, but how many people live there?
No idea.
Is this closest wins, you say?
It is closest wins. Bonus tends to be just because, why not?
Right! Benford!
It's the most popular city. Oh.
Yes, Alex, what are your thoughts?
I could be way off here, but I'm going to go for 18 million people.
Okay.
South. Boudica?
The 19 million.
You scumbag. You utter scumbag. You've already won, Robin. You've already won 7-3.
Sorry, I don't know what to do. I'm teasing. 50-50 chance, I'm joking. Alex. Come
it's
on.
One of those jokes where it's not really a joke at all, though, is it?
Is it the Price Is Right? Isn't it where they do that? Is it the Price Is Right? The Generation Game. I get confused.
I think it's the Price Is Right.
Price Is Right. Is the Generation Game? You have to remember all the stuff coming across the conveyor belt. Is that right? And you win what you can remember. I think it's the Generation Game. Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments. No, it's way higher than that. It's 37.4 million.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. How can so many people exist in one space?
I know, right? That's mad, isn't it?
That is mad.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now those pods make more sense.
To keep people in.
So literally, it was double our guesses.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because yeah, how many people live in London? I thought it was
like 7 million, isn't it? I thought London was
I thought
was
it was
bad,
like 6 million, but I mean, I could... Oh yeah, so there's like 8.9 million? 8.3 million? 8.4 million in New York?
Okay, there you go. And that looks nightmarish.
Well, there's 5.5 million people in the entirety of Scotland, so if we want to move there,
another reason to go. Not crowded.
It's crazy. That is mad. I mean, we're talking about the whole urban area of they talk about the city versus the district,
Yeah.
So we're talking about kind of like the surrounding areas as well, as opposed to just the greater Tokyo area. That's what we're talking about. But yeah, mad population size. Pretty crazy. I'd like to visit though. Seems like a cool place to visit.
Yeah, it does seem quite cool.
Yeah, at some point. I had quite a few friends who've gone there and said it's just really vibrant, crazy place. But cool. So yeah, one day when this is all over, COVID debacle.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great quiz. Thank you, Martin.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Well played, Alex. Thank you. And then let us know at home how you got on. Let us know your scores. No cheating, as always. Be sure to check out our Patreon episode. after this if you fancy some more depressing shit. And and yeah, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me this week. And see you next time.
Yeah,
see you next time.
Right, take care.
See you next week, guys.
Bye-bye.